CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're headed into Earth orbit with the People's Republic of China's Long March 5B. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black, and he'll do a quick history of why it's called 5B. Bob, this is the one that works, but they still drop it anywhere it lands, right? This is out of control once it finishes its booster.
Correct, John. The Long March 5B is the largest rocket China has. They use it to launch their big space station modules. It's now in the launch pad with the Miang Tian module. That's the last big module that's going up to complete the Chinese space station. It's scheduled for a launch on October 31st, but it's going to use the Long March 5B. And in this case, Chicken Little is right. The sky is going to fall, because every time the Long March 5B launches, it's made up of a core stage with two side strap-on boosters. And the strap-on boosters give it enough energy so that the core stage itself reaches orbit, releases the module, and then at that point turns the core stage, with the core stage engines turned off, it's now out of control. Because as far as I know, and unless something has changed, and China won't tell us, but if they don't tell us, it means they probably haven't changed anything. The engines on the core stage are not restartable. Once they've shut them off, they can't turn them back on again, which means they have no way of bringing this the core stage down in a controlled manner. And it's big. It's big enough that it hits the ground. And they've now launched about four of these, maybe five. And every single time, the core stage has been a threat to habitable areas. In one case, if it had come down 15 minutes earlier, it would have landed in the New York metropolitan area. So they're going to launch again. They're going to put this module up, and we should expect that sometime the week following, China will once again violate the Outer Space Treaty. We'll have a object from space threatening almost anyone in the world. But that's coming up. That's a Halloween gift from China, John. Bless their heart.
Also in Earth orbit, another adversary's remains. This is Russia's anti-satellite test. What is it threatening this time, Bob?
It's ISS. Fortunately, most of the pieces from this November 21st anti-satellite test, this is a case where Russia launched a missile to blow up a defunct Cosmos satellite. And they successfully blew it up and produced thousands of pieces of debris. Well, most of the debris has already fallen back to Earth, fortunately, burned up in the atmosphere. There's still a little less than 600 pieces in orbit. Most of those will actually be gone by 25. We expect there'll only be 38 large pieces left after that date. But right now, there's still about 600. And one of them was kind of come very close to ISS, within 3 miles. And so they earlier this week, the Russians used the Progress freighter that was docked to ISS to fire its engines for just over 5 minutes to change the orbit of the station so that that piece of junk could not hit the station. But, you know, like China, Russia doesn't necessarily follow the Outer Space Treaty. They are an autocratic, authoritarian culture, and they just do what they want. And so they produce junk that could threaten people in space.
OneWeb is a company that watched Russia steal from OneWeb, but OneWeb is relentless and it's back in action thanks to India. What is proposed here, Bob?
It's happened. OneWeb needed to get other rocket companies to launch the satellites the Russians were supposed to. They had about 500 plus satellites that needed to get launched, and Russia was supposed to do about 10 or so launches to get those up. And of course, with the Ukraine war and the confiscation of 36 OneWeb satellites, OneWeb had to find a different company to launch the remaining satellites. So they signed contracts with a variety of companies, SpaceX and Relativity with two, but they also signed a contract with India's space agency's commercial arm, ENSIL, which is the agency is called ISRO, but ENSIL is the commercial arm of it. And they signed a deal with it to actually launch two different geosynchronous launch rockets, India's biggest rocket, to put up 72 OneWeb satellites in two different launches. They paid about $65 million per launch. to get this done. The first launch occurred this past weekend, successfully India. This is the very first time the GSLV rocket was used for an international commercial customer. And previously they only used it for Indian launches, essentially. And so they successfully did so. That puts it on the market now as a competitor to other countries, including SpaceX business. And India's been in a doldrums for 2+ years because they panicked over the Wuhan flu and shut down. And while they did that, everybody else was getting their business. Well, so this launch simply puts them back on the map, I think, and it's a good thing. We don't know who's going to launch the rest of the OneWeb satellites. SpaceX will do some launches. Relativity, once it gets flying, will launch some satellites. But it could be that ISRO in India is going to launch a bunch more than just the two they've contracted.
How did they get such a low price, Bob? This is comparable to a Falcon 9. Are they subsidizing this?
India's labor costs help a lot, obviously, but they were able to be competitive. This price is very comparable to what SpaceX charges standard Falcon 9 price. I'm sure that people get cheaper prices from SpaceX if they use reusable boosters nowadays. SpaceX, though, has not publicized those numbers anymore. I would say that ISRO can compete close to SpaceX. They can't beat SpaceX's prices. But there's another component here. Companies that owns half of OneWeb now after it came out of bankruptcy is an Indian investment firm. And so I think that because this constellation is half owned by an Indian company, they probably wanted to give India the business and just simply insisted on a competitive price. And even if it isn't the lowest price, there's a certain, you know, favoritism here, I think, for the country of origin.
Another detail, Bob, OneWeb, is that the same as Starlink? Is it offering the same kind of service?
Comparable, but not identical. They are competitors. There's no doubt about it. There's great overlap, but there's slight differences in how OneWeb is offered. OneWeb is designed where the signals do not go back to small terminals owned by the customer. They go back to larger down stations, which then distributes the signal to the customers. And so it's designed really to handle big internet customers. For example, trucking companies that want to be able to track their trucks, they will use this communication. They could use this kind of communication system. Or television stations that want to have a lot of customers at one time. But it doesn't mean they can't do residential either. It's just slightly, or the overlap is a little different.
All right. A Starlink report. Starlink's constellation can do GPS.
Yes.
Is that spying, Bob? GPS?
No, not at all. GPS satellites, the U.S. GPS system and the GLONASS system by the Russians and the Beidou system by China, the Galileo system by Europe, they're all government systems, and they provide satellites that your GPS unit that your car has or you have for hiking tacks into and provides you your location, just really good accuracy. But they're all government-owned. It appears that Starlink's internet satellites, the constellation, there's about 3,000 of them in orbit right now. Some researchers decided to see if, without using any of SpaceX's proprietary information, whether the data from the available data from the Starlink satellites could be used as a alternative GPS constellation, and they found they can. They could do it. They could pin down the location of the Starlink terminal that they were using. And so it's, of course, this is a test. It's not a real system, but it does suggest that if you have the right handheld device tuned to the right signals from these many constellations, it can work just like other GPS satellites and provide you your location very accurately. The guy who did this research says that if they had the more information, they could locate themselves within 1 meter, which is as good, if not better, than what the government GPS systems provide. This is a no-brainer for SpaceX's management at some point. At some point, they can make extra money here by putting together a handheld GPS system or a GPS system that can work in cars and make some money from it. Or they can work with others to do the same thing. It's an alternative, and it's, once again, what's good about it is it's a private alternative to the government system.
I want to understand this. I'm watching a projection right now of Starlink satellites swimming overhead of me in Connecticut. And Starlink 1568 is just off the coast of Long Island. It's headed for Massachusetts. So how does the GPS work? Why would that satellite, there's another one, Starlink 2534, just to the west, crossing in New York State?
The way GPS works, John, all GPS satellites, is timing and trigonometry. They get the exact timing, timing relative between different satellites, very precise timing and data, and then they use that literally trigonometry, angles and where it's located and the timing for signals to come down, and that they can then, triangulate your position from those multiple satellites. Well, SpaceX satellites have timing information. This is the non-proprietary information this research was able to use. They've got timing data that comes down that's obtainable, that's not private. And using that timing data, he found he could do the exact same thing as with a GPS satellite. Well, there's no reason then you cannot set up the same kind of system. It would require, of course, different electronics and different software, but, the same thing applies to, the different government systems. All are slightly different, and if your GPS accesses the information from all of them, it's designed to access the different information from all of them. There's no reason they can't add Starlink to that at some point.
Bob, it's just amazing. I just have to pause to remember Telstar when I was a youth. Telstar was the big story of launching something that was going to be able to provide communication on Earth to a satellite back down to Earth. And now on my iPhone, I'm watching hundreds of satellites swim by overhead, all linked to commercial customers. And that's within one lifetime. It's amazing, Bob.
Isn't it amazing? Well, there was a great science fiction story about a guy who was born in 1900, took a time trip travel to 1950, then came back to 1900, could get no one to believe him when he described what had been accomplished in those 50 years. And it's no different to us in the same thing. 50 years ago, imagine these kind of satellites in orbit, this kind of technology, no one would have believed it. But here it is.
Now, we headed to Cornwall. I'm going to be very modest about this. Cornwall is Virgin Orbit. What are they up to, Bob?
Well, Cornwall is Cornwall. Cornwall's got a runway, and it wants to be a spaceport. It wants to get the first launch off the British Isles, orbital launch ever. And it has contracted with Virgin Orbit, allowing Virgin Orbit to launch from Cornwall. And Virgin Orbit is a system that works similar to Orbital ATK's old Pegasus system. You launch from an airplane, the rocket is underneath the plane, and at a certain point the plane reaches the right location, it drops the rocket off, and the rocket then proceeds into orbit. And Virgin Orbit has done a bunch of launches already, and commercial launches. They're successful. They've got contracts. Well, they've got a contract to launch seven small sats, and they want to launch from Cornwall for a variety of reasons, and they've already transported the rocket, the payloads, and the 747 that takes off to Cornwall, and they've now announced they've gotten the marine license from the United Kingdom for their planned October 29th launch from Cornwall. And so it looks like Cornwall, the southern western tip of the British Isles of England, is going to win the race to be the first location that's going to get an orbital launch out of Great Britain. It's not going to get as many launches in the long run, and it's always going to have to be Virgin Orbit from Cornwall because it's a runway. It's not an actual launch pad. But nonetheless, we're looking forward to, before the end of the month, the first launch out of Great Britain.
This balloon gimmick has taken off, Bob. What is HALO?
HALO is a Spanish high-altitude tourist balloon company. There had been a legal battle between two different Spanish companies. One of those companies is defunct and gone. In fact, its material has been purchased by, I think, Worldview in Tucson. But the other company, HALO, is now preparing to do its first test flight out of India of its high-altitude tourist balloon. It'll do a second test flight early next year from Spain, and their goal is to offer tourists flights to 25 miles altitude in a capsule attached to a balloon. You'd pay somewhere between $100,000 and $200,000 to have this tourist flight in a capsule that can carry 8 passengers and a pilot. They hope to do their first launches by 25. They are now joining Worldview in Tucson and Space Perspective in Florida as competing companies to provide these high-altitude, near-space experiences for relatively little money compared to the suborbital quick flights that Blue Origin offers.
Bob, NASA is doing business with Lockheed Martin. at a bargain basement price here for Orion. Remind us all what Orion is, Bob.
Orion is the capsule that NASA contracted Lockheed Martin to make that is supposedly, the big lie from NASA, supposedly going to take our American astronauts to the moon and beyond. And that, it's basically an ascent-descent capsule that's overpriced and overweight because they want to make believe it'll do interplanetary travels. It can't. But nonetheless, NASA has now contracted from Lockheed Martin for another $2 billion to buy three more capsules. Three capsules for $2 billion. It's a lot of money. It's ironic. They've spent something like, $18 billion to develop the Orion capsule and be able to buy six capsules for $18 billion. SpaceX is building Starship. You could probably get 5 to 10 Orion capsules inside a Starship. And Starship is going to be completely reusable. And it's going to do that for about $10 billion total. So for half the cost, Starship's going to be around. But NASA's buying more Orion capsules. I don't know. I can't figure out why NASA's smartest, most brilliant people in the universe can't figure out which is a better deal here, and it certainly isn't Orion.
Bob Zimmerman, Behind the Black. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.